is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings. Welcome in our DraftKings Network audience, alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. Michael's out there in Jersey. I'm live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, where in about a half an hour, we'll have VP of Operations here at Circa, Mike Palm, who's going to join us for the final 30 minutes of the show, get into all things Circa Survivor, Circa Millions. Of course, Palm's pressing three big picture items that he wants to get Michael's opinion on, and great stuff that we had in hour one as well from our great friend Mike Somich. If you missed any of our opening hour of the show, remember, it's always downloadable in podcast form, and we got a new episode of the GM Shuffle drop in today. Michael, drop it like it's hot. You guys have some good back and forth today?
Yeah, we did. We talked a lot about, you know, the Carolina Panthers, what lies for them. We also talked about a clip you sent. Our good friend at ESPN, Danny O, said that I disliked him, which is not true at all. I don't agree with what he says, but it's not a question of disliking him. It's just I don't agree with his football opinions. And so we talked about that for a little while. We broke down some of the games, and we talked about your story that you won't let die, Aaron Rodgers coming back. Of course, we had to talk about that. And so that's all. You know, we kind of covered it all.
Listen, it's news, Michael. There's nothing more. Like, if he says he's going to go, if he's back on the practice field, every time Aaron Rodgers takes so much as a breath, it's something that we have to report on.
I completely understand.
But Michael,
I'm all in.
I was telling producer Elliot, I found that Dan Orlovsky clip this morning.
How did you?
I'm on YouTube, just kind of skimming through some stuff, seeing what I might have missed from the day before, and on my opening page, and maybe it's because I was looking up Bailey Zappi stuff yesterday when I saw the report that he was getting starters reps, that it popped up on my homepage on YouTube just about, you know, like Patriots stuff.
How does YouTube know what we're doing? I mean, it's scary, right? I mean, like,
it's wild.
You know, you talk about something, and the next thing you know, you're getting advertisements for it. Like, somebody's spying on us. I don't know.
They
anyway,
are.
Anyway, go ahead.
They know our every move. Producer Elliot says we have the clip, so let's play it real quick.
Mike Lombardi on his GM Shuffle podcast said, and used this word, said
Mike Lombardi hates me.
Okay. Well, he said, so there's no love lost then.
Wait, why? Wait. Why?
I do not know.
Huh. Okay. Well, he said that he believes there's disdain on the team for Mac Jones. Have you heard anything along the lines of that?
I haven't heard anything like that, no. I
mean, but as far as you know, he just has disdain for you.
I know very publicly Mike Lombardi does not like me.
Huh.
Wow.
That's so strange.
It's a long list.
It's a long list? Who else is on the list?
It's a long list, man.
Who else is on the list?
Hey, no. You got haters.
Yeah, it's part of it.
I love that he just immediately like jumped in and said, Mike Lombardi hates me. Hate is a strong word, though, Michael.
It's too strong. And I never said disdain. I got to go back. I asked producer Elliot if I used the – I did. I said he doesn't connect to his team. He's not well-liked. You could see, you know, it was all about connection. It was all about being, you know, you got to want to play for the leader. It wasn't a disdain. I think his teammates don't like him. Whether I don't think that's the definition of disdain, but anyway, so I don't dislike Dan. I think Dan says things that are unfair to people. For example, you know, to try to put the burden of MVP on Justin Fields was wrong. I know people in the league that were trying to get in touch with him. People that cared about Justin Fields, people that cared about his success. They knew how I felt about him as a player. But what they didn't want is the same thing I was saying. Like, can't we just let Justin Fields get good before he gets great? Now, I didn't think he was going to get good, so let me be clear there. But do we have to get from bad to MVP? I mean, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about C.J. Stroud for the MVP. Seriously.
Yeah,
let C.J. Stroud just play a little bit before we start talking MVP.
We can't skip steps. No, I think that's a very reasonable argument. And of course, it makes it that much more firm when it ends up being right. And Justin Fields has the season that he did. Let's walk before we can run type of a thing. But thought it was a fun conversation. Excited to hear the full breakdown on GM Shuffle. Make sure you download it wherever you get your podcast. And speaking of our guy, Femi Abebefe, who of course hosts that with you every Monday and Thursday, tonight's Thursday night football game, the GM Shuffle crowd is calling the Femi Bowl because it's his hometown, Seattle, Washington, facing the team that he loves so much in the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys laying 9 in the spot tonight, total 47.5. And when we had Mike Somich on the program earlier today, he said that he thought Dallas could really choose their score tonight. You agree?
No, I don't. I think these games are a lot harder than when do they ever go like we think they are, right?
Oh, well, Michael,
when do they ever
story
go?
Of my
I mean,
life
Seattle's
on,
got
story of my
got
life
pride.
On Thanksgiving, Michael, when I said the Lions are going to blow out the Packers. No shot tonight. They're coming down to earth. So much for that one.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dan Quinn, the off defense coordinator of the Cowboys, he knows Seattle really well. A lot of people speculate that if Pete Carroll ever decides to walk away from the game, Dan Quinn would be the next head coach up there. Maybe that's true. I don't know, but that's a lot of people in the league circles talk about that. I think this is a game where Seattle's backs are to the wall. They're a competitive team, and I do think they're going to play as good as they can play. Do I think they can win? No. The numbers of Dallas are insane how good they are, insane how well Dak has played. And so on paper, it looks like this should be an easy win. But we're leaving out intestinal fortitude. We're leaving out competitive spirit. We're leaving out the will to win. We're leaving out our backs are to the wall. And I think Seattle will play better in that category. Look, I don't like the coaching matchup. I think Seattle's defensive staff doesn't really ever make you play left-handed. But I do think that this will be a game where Geno Smith can keep them interested and keep them in it.
Now, of course, Geno has been dealing with a little bit of an injury. Pete Carroll said this week that night and day better than what it was a week ago. But looking at the last 5 games for Geno Smith and Dak Prescott, it's night and day, the types of performances that they've had, Michael. Geno, 2-3, 62% completions, 1,193 yards, 5 touchdowns to 4 interceptions, and an 82-4 passer rating. Dak, meanwhile, 4-1, 71% completions, over 1,600 yards, 17 touchdowns, and just 2 picks, and a 124.8 passer rating. Since that Week 7 bye, Dak has thrown 7 more touchdowns than any other quarterback in the National Football League. They have been clicking. And so I have a lot of confidence that that's going to continue for the Cowboys tonight. And my worry for Seattle is that even if Geno is in a better spot this week, that pass rush, like, I don't know if his dinged up offensive line is going to be able to keep him upright. He got sacked 6 times last week.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, his numbers are trending in the wrong way, right? You know, last year he was 11.8 on bad throws. This year he's 14.7. Last year, he was on target 78, almost 79% of the time. This year, he's down to 73. You know, the biggest question is they've not been able to really run the football, right? This year, they're 29th in rushing attempts. They're 26th in rushing yards. And they're 21st in yards per attempt. Last year, they were 22nd in attempts, but they were 7th in yards per rush. They could make big runs. They could run the football. They had more balance. And what's happened to them is they put so much pressure on Geno to have to be the guy. And it's hard. You know, Geno needs, he's throwing the ball way too many times. He needs to throw less, not more. And then he becomes a more effective. But here's where the problems come in for tonight. And this is where the style of the game becomes so important. Because of Dallas's ability, averaging 19-plus points in the first half, only giving up 8, they're playing from in front. And as a play caller, it's hard to look at your sheet when you're down 2 touchdowns and call runs. You're trying to get back in the game. You're trying to stay even with the game. I mean, Cleveland did this against Baltimore, and they did it really well. It takes great discipline to do it. And it got themselves back in the game because Lamar turned it over. That's not what Seattle has done. Seattle has tended to try to throw the football to get them out of it, and they're not a good team on the conversion downs. I mean, that's just the reality of it. They're not a good team trying to convert third downs. It becomes a real issue for them offensively and defensively. And so since you can't convert and you can't get off the field on third down, then it's all of us. It's hard to maintain a run game, and it's hard to play.
Right, and Kenneth Walker technically listed as doubtful, but all the insiders reporting he'll be out tonight once again dealing with that oblique injury. The Seattle offense has scored 16 or fewer points in three of their most recent losses. They have 20 straight possessions now without a touchdown, the longest active streak in the National Football League. I don't know if you saw in that props graphic that we had up a moment ago, Michael, minus 230 for Dak to have 2+ touchdowns. Usually that prop number is at over 1.5 touchdowns. It's it to have two or more in this spot, which is unique, and it's still juiced to high heaven in that spot. I don't have a firm play on this game, but I think I might do like a pizza money bet, Michael, just on the off chance that things do get out of hand, because the Cowboys do have so many wins that have exceeded that 20-point margin. I know you think that Seattle with their backs against the wall is going to be a little bit more competitive tonight, so I don't trust just like putting a big money bet on Dallas -9. I'm not going to do that. But a pizza money play at plus 275 on the Cowboys to win by 19.5 or more points. They have five wins this season by 20 or more points at home specifically. That's when they do their most damage. And I know the flack that they get about not beating over 500 teams, but Seattle's been a different team over the last 5 weeks. So,
well, you know, you're playing into the, I mean, your numbers, they're 41 points scored at home. They're 12 points allowed. So you're playing into a strength, right? And I'm sure Seattle, I'm sure Pete Carroll's told his team those things too. You know, it's just Seattle can't. The one thing I think that's impressive about, a lot of things impressive about Dallas, is they haven't scored all these points because they've gotten turnovers.
Also, we got to give credit where credit is due. Daron Bland scoring more touchdowns than some quarterbacks in the NFL right now. It's crazy. We're going to step aside here, Michael. Speaking of quarterbacks, a potential change in Cleveland. We'll talk through your thoughts on Joe Flacco when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't become a VSiN Pro subscriber yet, what are you doing? We're giving you one last chance to sign up on our best deal of the year. Today is the final day to sign up on our Black Friday extended special and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through May 1st. It's only $60. You'll get daily best bets, unlimited access to our exclusive betting splits, premium analysis, and 24/7 video, plus all of our upcoming betting guides that have best bets for the upcoming college bowl season, the Super Bowl, and of course, March Madness. The offer does expire later on today, though, so hustle in VSiN.com/subscribe. That's how you can sign up for this Black Friday extended special, VSIN.com/subscribe. $60, it really is our best deal, and it is so worthwhile for all of the content that you get, as well as all of the articles that our guy Michael Lombardi puts out there on the website. It's great stuff. Michael,
you need it for the hoops. I mean, how about St. Joe's beating Villanova last night? I mean, who saw that one coming?
The upset.
I mean, you know, so
we had an upset the first day of college basketball this year with Michigan State, like crazy.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, and then Arkansas, congratulations, beats Duke. You know, so you gotta have to, especially now as the portal's open in college football. I mean, you're gonna have to rely on other sources, and that's why I think, you know, the football guide is so important. So is the basketball guide, NBA and college.
Yeah, that college bowl guide, they do a great job of monitoring who's in, who's out, giving you all the information that you need. So that one, I think that $60, it's worth it for that bowl guide exclusively. Michael, but let's talk a little bit more NFL here, because we referenced it a little in hour one, but the news that Joe Flacco taking first team reps yesterday as Dorian Thompson-Robinson remains in concussion protocol. If he doesn't clear the protocol, Joe Flacco is going to start a game at 38 years old. We haven't seen him since the end of last year with the Jets. If he starts, he'll be the fourth different starting quarterback for Cleveland this year.
Well, look, Cleveland's at a place where they're not looking for an answer at quarterback. They're looking for a guy to prevent a problem, right?
Yeah.
All they're trying to do is to manage the game and get somebody with experience where they can teach them their run game and say, okay, when the mic's down here, we want to run this. When the strong safety's over here, we're doing this. So we get them in the right run. We're going to rely on the running game And when we ask you to make a couple throws here and there, you can do it. Look, we're not trying to be – they're already – without Joe Flacco, they're 30th in the league on third down offense, right? We're not asking you to be a hero. We're not asking you not to – we're not asking you to make plays. I mean, they've turned the ball over 6 times in the last 3 weeks. That's their biggest problem. And against Denver, they turned it over 3 times. They need to run the football, right? They need to play like they did against Pittsburgh. Ugly, you know, not many yards, but they won the game. Pittsburgh had one big play in the game like they did in the first game, but they were able to kick the field goal at the end of the game. That's how they have to play to win now that they don't have Watson. And I think Flacco gives them a better chance. Now, Flacco's not going to run around for first downs like P.J. Walker did, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, how many first downs can you really get out of them? Rushing, you know, because people know to spy on them, to look at it. You know, look, we can't let Walker beat us with his legs. Make him stay in the pocket. I mean, really, he only ran for 3 first downs when he was playing anyway. So it wasn't like he was making plays with his feet.
You just need a stable quarterback that can try to stop giving the Browns defense a short field, right? Like, just do enough. I feel like the Jets are probably wishing they still had Joe Flacco at this point, given the quarterback options they have.
Well, the Jets' problems, I think, everybody blames it on the quarterback at the Jets, Stormy, but I think their problems run deeper. You know, their offense is horrendous. You know, it's really bad. And, yeah, they're not getting good quarterback play, but Breece Hall isn't running the ball worth a darn either. Right? I mean, he's not even running the ball very well at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors, Michael, as to why the Jets have not been successful, whether it's from the pieces that are on the field or the coordinator in Nathaniel Hackett or their head coach in Robert Saleh or their defense not performing to the talent level that they have. Like, there's a lot of layers to what's wrong with the Jets. But as for the Joe Flacco of it all, I do think he ends up starting this week. The only quarterback we've seen this year that's passed concussion protocol in the same week was Brock Purdy in October after that Vikings game. And we saw the next week that he maybe was a little bit rushed and still not himself fully from that standpoint. We know how much the league is trying to protect these quarterbacks too. So I think that it'll be him. And in Dorian Thompson-Robinson's 3 starts, Michael, I was just looking through the games, and you know you don't want to count that first start too much because you only had about 2.5 hours to prepare, but scored 3 points, 13 points, and 12 points. Their passing game, 27th in the NFL, 29th in yards per play. Third down efficiency is bad. Giveaways, it hasn't been good. So hopefully Joe Flacco, as he steps in, can just do enough, despite being a little bit rusty and short notice learning the playbook these last couple of weeks. Also, I did want to get your opinion on the Myles Garrett injury and the report from Mary Kay Cabot this week that he actually likely does have structural damage in that shoulder, that it's probably painful for him, but he's just going to continue to try to play through it as best he can.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting, especially considering how much power does he have in it, right? Can he pull, tug, can he do the things he needs to do to be an effective rusher? Because they're going to need their defense to make plays. One of the things I think that you have to take into consideration is when you watch some of these teams play, we don't talk enough about field position, right? We don't talk enough about, like, where do we get the ball, where do we have the ball, how are we playing the game? And one of the things that the Browns defense has to do is set up field position in the game. I mean, that's got to be critical. And if they can play offense on a short field and have a good kicker, all of a sudden, you know, you got a chance. Just take the Carolina Panthers, for example. I mean, they're last in the league in field position. They have the worst starting point of any team in the league. They're 32nd. And their defense has the worst starting point of any team in the league. So the opposing offense gets the ball with great field position. The opposing defense always has them pinned back. No matter what you do offensively, now they're no good offensively, but it's hard to overcome that. Where the Browns, that's where they have to gain a little bit of an advantage. That's the body punches that no one sees. You got to be able, if you can control field position against the Rams, make them play on a long field, take away their options, take away what they want to do, not let them run the ball, get a lot of third downs in the game, make them block you one-on-one, you're going to turn the ball over.
Michael, because you mentioned those Carolina Panthers, they've actually taken some money this week at the +6. It's down to 5 now in Tampa against the Buccaneers. Does that surprise you a little bit that they're getting played after firing Frank Reich?
I mean, when I just looked at the circuit, I wanted to look at this week's circuit contest lines, and I can't wait to talk to Mike Palm about it because there's so many ways this can go. But when I saw that number was 5, not 5.5, That tells me they're getting action. They expect that number potentially on Sunday to be 4.5. They hope it stays at 5. You know, like, for example, I thought the Eagle game in the contest would be 2.5. It's 3. So that means it's a strong 3 in the contest, right? So, you know, I think that's why you have to look at these contest numbers to really get an indication of where, because they're moving the number based on where they think it's going to be on Sunday. They're trying not to give away. Chiefs-Packers at 5.5.
Yep. That game, I think, is going to be sneaky interesting, actually, because the Packers have been playing so much better the last handful of weeks. You mentioned that Eagles-49ers game, far and away the game of the week coming up, that revenge factor from last year's NFC Championship for San Francisco, and they're healthy. Meanwhile, we saw some practice reports, Fletcher Cox and Zach Cunningham not practicing. Yep. Lane Johnson missed last game. He was limited. How much do you think that's impacting the line and the way people view Philly at home this week?
Well, I think everybody's limited in Philly all because of Philly's, I mean, let's face it, Philly played 92 plays on defense. I mean, they're not practicing out there. There's no way they can. I mean, they just have to rest, kind of go through their mental reps, get as many mental reps as they possibly can, because there's no way they're going to be able to play and be physical and have practices like that. No, and they'll play good. I mean, here's where you get to worry about Philly is in the fourth quarter. It's in the fourth quarter. I know they usually come back in the fourth, but that's when you get that's when the wear and tear of all the games catch up to you. You just don't have enough gas in the tank to finish it out against a team that's going to play you 60 minutes really hard.
The Buffalo Bills have been a great example of that in the fourth quarter. But it's interesting that you mentioned that about Philly, because that was kind of my thought process. We know that San Francisco has so much success when they get out in front and they play with a lead. But what scares me is that this is an Eagles team that has been so good at coming back and rallying in the second half that I didn't know necessarily which direction I felt strongly about at that 3. I like the 49ers to win, but at that number, I feel like the line's pretty dead on.
Yeah, it is. I would be like, I don't think it's a touch. I don't think it's, to me, you're guessing.
Yeah.
Because you're guessing that the Eagles are going to be fresh as a daisy and get going. And, you know, you don't know that. You know, to me, that 3 number, it's a little bit like when Baltimore was playing Detroit. It was that 3 number, and you kind of had a sense that maybe it wasn't going to be Detroit's day. But this is a home game for Philly.
Yep, you know that Nick Sirianni is going to be using some of that in the locker room. You are a 10-1 team. You won the NFC last year to punch your ticket to a Super Bowl, and you're an underdog at home against this team that's been talking bad about you. They'll be motivated. They'll be just fine. Yeah. I'm not. Oh, God, I'm so nervous, Michael. The 49ers fan in me can't take it. We've got to take a break, though, real quickly. The final half hour of the show, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, Mike Palm, is going to hang out with us, get his take on Circa Survivor, Millions, and Palm. Pressing 3.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you always find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Please drink responsibly. It must be 21 and up. And Total Wine, great spot to go get everything you need for the holidays. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And for this final half hour, as always on Thursdays, we bring in VP of Operations here at Circa Resort & Casino in downtown Las Vegas, Mike Palm. And speaking of the holidays, you said last week when you were on that you were getting all the Christmas decorations up for Thanksgiving. How'd it go?
It went well. I'll send Elliot a picture. Maybe I'll have time to put it up before this 30 minutes it up. But it went well. My wife cooked. She hates turkey, so no turkey. She made a nice ham, you know, pineapple sauce, and shrimp scampi and cornbread. It was very good. We had some folks over after the Cowboys and Commanders got over. So we kind of ate in between the Cowboy game and the 49er game. It was very nice. The kids were excited for the lights. People were slowing down in the neighborhood to watch them. So it was nice.
Awesome. Mike, let's go to the most important game of the weekend. Iowa, Michigan. Do you think the under's coming in here?
You're the worst.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Michigan can, if they can run the ball effectively on them, or if Iowa's going to force them into some third downs, they're going to have to throw the ball. I wouldn't want to lay this big of a number just because, and it's come down, right? It was 23. It's come down to 22. I would have made the total 10 points higher than the spread. I think the total's a little high. You know, the team total for Iowa is 7.5, yet the game total is 35. I mean, so, but there's a lot of ways to bet the Iowa team total, especially at DraftKings. You can bet over under a half point each half. You can bet over under a half touchdown for the game, which I think there's a strategy here. Bet under a half touchdown, but bet yes, there will be a defensive or special teams touchdown, because that's the only way Iowa's scoring. And you can arbitrage a winner there. You know, in general, Big Ten coaches don't try to run it up against Ferentz. I think they're very respectful. You know, he's the dean of all college coaches now, 22 years at Iowa, the most longest tenured coach. If Harbaugh's out ahead here, 17 points in the fourth quarter, you know, they're not going to be throwing the ball all over the field. So I will watch this game with interest. Unlikely that I'll have any action on it.
Just insane to see that spread in a 35 total game. Thank God we're getting rid of divisions.
I think divisions are better for bettors. They might be worse for sideline reporters trying to generate ratings. But I think they're better
for bettors.
For game quality,
generally speaking?
I'd rather. Every game in the Big Ten West has title implications all year long. And the lines are closer spreads. I mean, if they had to play, all of them had to play Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State every year, who knows? Now we get Oregon and Washington in the mix.
This is go ahead, Michael.
Well, I wanted to ask Mike, before we get off college football, if Alabama beats Georgia, are they one of your Final Four?
That's exactly what I was going to ask him, Michael, so we're dead on.
There we go. Stormy.
It's different. It depends on who are they going to get the last spot with. Let's assume Michigan beats Iowa. They're in. The key linchpin here is Florida State taking care of Louisville, right? If they do, they will be in. I don't want to hear all this talk that an undefeated Power 5 champion is not getting in. They're getting in. I don't care if the quarterback's hurt. They've earned the right to be in there. The winner of Oregon and Washington is in automatically. There's no scenario that doesn't happen. There are scenarios that both of them could get in, I believe. So let's assume Michigan's in, Florida State's in, and let's say Oregon, who's a 10-point favorite, beats Washington. They're in. And there's one spot left for a one-loss SEC champ Alabama or a one-loss Big 12 champ Texas. The committee must put Texas in. It's a total sham. A total sham if they don't put the head-to-head as the number one differentiator between two teams.
Even with Alabama beating the number one team in the country.
They played head-to-head in Tuscaloosa, and Texas won by double figures.
Why doesn't the Washington-Oregon earlier season head-to-head count in that then? Washington won that game earlier this season.
On their home field, and Oregon will have beat them on a neutral, which is a more quality win. It was not week two, Stormy. Plus all of the common opponents, Oregon has had much better strength of victory than Washington has. Washington has played, what, 9 straight one-score games? So, but there is a scenario with total chaos that Washington and Oregon could both get in. I think Ohio State is in real trouble here. Even though they played very well in Ann Arbor, the difference was a first-quarter interception. I thought the two teams are very much equal, but they're going to be left out. They would have to have Louisville beat Florida State. They'd also have to have Georgia beat Alabama. They have to have Oklahoma State, and this is a runaway line, beat Texas. They need so much things to happen. And they would actually need, I think, Washington to beat Oregon, to give Oregon 2 losses, so that Washington would be a clear undefeated team, and they could compare, wouldn't have to compare to Oregon with one loss, but rather compare to 2 losses. And so there's a scenario they could get in. Now, Brett McMurphy was on with Tim and I yesterday, and he said they're supposed to put Texas in over Alabama, but the people on the committee will tell you, I don't know that they'll allow the vote to be final if there isn't an SEC team in the Final Four. Alabama beating Georgia makes things very interesting depending on what else happens. If Florida State loses, then there won't have to be that argument between Texas and Alabama. But if there is, I don't think in good conscience you can put them in. Alabama, I mean. Your thoughts, Michael?
I don't see how Alabama doesn't get in. I mean, if they beat Georgia, they should get in. The Texas game, whether it's week two, week three.
It was the second week of the season, their second game.
That Texas game was, but not the Oregon-Washington.
No, that's the one I was talking about. It was Texas-Alabama.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought
Texas
you were talking about it was like week 4.
Texas doesn't get knocked for losing Oklahoma. Why doesn't Texas get – I mean, who has Texas played besides Oklahoma? That's a tough game.
Alabama.
Who? That's it.
At Tuscaloosa. No, what? Well, okay. They beat a very good Kansas State team. They won at Jack Trice at night.
Kansas
that's a very difficult
that kid
spot.
Missed that field goal. Oh, that kid missed that field
extra
goal.
Point.
Kansas
State. He missed the extra point.
I mean, come on.
How about when they went to Jack Trice at night and a spot everybody, the whole world was on Iowa State and covered the game.
Instead of the woulda, shoulda, coulda, if Alabama wins thing, where things pan out and you look at conference championship weekend, who wins, who's in? Like, do you think Alabama's going to beat Georgia? Because if you don't, then this conversation doesn't matter.
I played I don't know. I played the over. Okay. I think they could beat Georgia. But,
yeah,
you know, the SEC, I think the SEC clearly, you have to understand the conferences wants to. The SEC clearly wants Georgia to win, so there's no dispute. Plus, they'd love to have a three-time champion, right? I mean, this doesn't happen. Once in a lifetime, you get a shot to three-peat. I think Oregon wins, but I don't want to lay 10. I mean, that's a runaway line, too. They deserve to win. Dan Lanning made a lot of questionable play calls at Husky Stadium. They deserve to win that game. I think Florida State will still beat Louisville, even with the backup. It's hard to say, though. There's not a lot of body of work. Texas is going to win, and they probably need style. I know that's a runaway, too, but I wouldn't take the points. I watched BYU dominate in Stillwater in the first half last week. I watched them play Central Florida actually get run out of the building. And Texas might think they need style points here if they have to line up against Alabama. They might still think there's some campaigning to do.
Yeah, I think they know they need style points. I think there's no question about that.
80 survivor entries remaining.
Yep.
Insane. But there were 71 this point last year, as Bill 80 put in his newsletter this week.
But there were 6,000 to 9,000, too. So I asked Paul this morning. So the intrinsic value of the tickets, 80 into 9.267 million, is $115,000 each. I said, if someone walked up to you, Paul, and gave you $230,000 to sell all your equity in your two entries, would you take it? And he acted like stunned by the question. So I don't know. He said he has a partner on these tickets. Now, he did buy 8 entries, that name, Bag of Picks. Two remaining, but he had a partner. They're 50-50 partners, and his partner wants no sort of buying in type of hedging, type of selling their shares, because the partner's going for $9 million. The partner thinks they're in great shape to go 20-0 with the picks, and they're going for the $9
million. Okay.
Yeah.
Dang. How tough is this week?
I don't know. I think there's options, but you have to look at where are there better options. So let's start with the Jaguars. The Jaguars on Monday night host Cincinnati. They're 8-point favorite. 34 of the 80 entries have the Jaguars. But remember, in week 17, they host Carolina, right? So what's a better spot? I don't know. Tampa Bay, the worry about Baker's health, the dead coach bounce against Carolina. Oh, I don't know that Frank Reich was hated there. Tampa Bay, this is the best spot to use them. And 79 out of the 80 have them. Pittsburgh, who I like in Survivor, laying 5.5 at home to Arizona. But Pittsburgh hosts New England Thursday night. Is that a better spot to use Pittsburgh? Do you want to save them? 14 people still have Kansas City. They are on the road at Green Bay. They go to New England on the 15th, on the week 15, and they host they're against Cincinnati. On Christmas, they have Raiders on Christmas. Yeah, Raiders. If you don't have the Eagles, you have to use them on Christmas. And then in week 17, they host Cincinnati without a quarterback, too. So it's interesting. I think Paulie was telling me through his answers, he's not using Tampa Bay. He's going to use it with Jacksonville on at least one.
Great stuff.
I think Jacksonville's a good play.
Yeah. We got more to get to with Mike Palm when we come back, including Palm's pressing 3, a few big picture items for Michael Lombardi. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
In the NBA, the game can change in an instant, but no matter how the action unfolds, DraftKings Sportsbook has your back. This week, new customers can score $150 instantly in bonus bets just for betting $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, VP of Operations Mike Palm in with us alongside Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and we have the picture. of your home.
What a turnaround.
We
by
got
this
the
crew.
Christmas decor.
Most of them are leaving tomorrow, I heard. But anyhow, go ahead.
Yes. Shout out our guy, Mikhail. We will miss him so much, by the way.
Good luck.
Audio technician.
Yes, good luck, Mikhail.
He is off to the
off
Air
we
Force
go
after
into
today.
The wild blue yonder.
So we will miss him a ton. But yes, we have the photo. Beautiful job.
Oh, thank you.
And
they
this was
like
done
big,
on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, big candy canes they look like. The kids,
that's
the
lovely,
kids,
Mike.
Kids
that's
love.
Awesome right there. Nice
the kids,
work.
And then in the house, that angle's not good, but in the house we have three different trees. And, you know, the banister and the stair. Yeah, but for each room. But it's all like a white theme, like white with blue, white with red, white with pink and all that. But it's a heavy white theme inside. So the inside looks so nice. I said we have to make the outside look nice, too.
Yeah,
and then
see,
four other houses on Friday and Saturday on our block.
That's right, what boom, boom, we need boom, next boom, week is the pictures of the trees inside.
We
big fan.
That. We can do that.
Big fan. It is time, though. For Palms Pressing 3, I know you've got a few big topics that are on your mind for our guy, Michael Lombardi. Where would you like to start?
Well, let's start with the Browns, Michael, because I'm intrigued by this situation. In his three starts for the Browns, P.J. Walker beat the 49ers at home, went on the road and beat the Colts 39-38, and was a deflected interception with 2 minutes to go in the game from beating the Seahawks in Seattle. When Deshaun Watson was lost for the season, Stefanski turned, instead of Walker, to DTR, who had looked horrific 2 months earlier in his lone start. Now with DTR hurt, the Browns have gone out and signed Joe Flacco, and word is Flacco may start on Sunday. What am I missing with P.J. Walker? The Browns are 7-4 and in the thick of the AFC playoff race. Doesn't Walker, in fact, give them the best chance to win?
I think a lot of this is what you can't see, right? You see the on the field, and what we don't see as fans is the meeting room, the handling of the offense, getting him into the right run, getting him out of a bad run, not making a mental mistake on the snap count, not turning the wrong way on a handoff. All those things that PJ, unfortunately, has never been there before in this offense. Now, Flacco has kind of played in this system before, especially in Baltimore when he was there with Kubiak, because this is Kubiak's number system. It's his whole offense. So Flacco's very familiar with it. I think a lot of it is just the experience factor. The fact that, look, we don't need a mistake. We can't make one. Our margin of victory is so small. Neither quarterback's going to participate, but I think P.J. Walker you want to bring him in the fourth inning, but God knows you're getting him out in the seventh. There's no way you're going to let him close the game. Now, I'm not saying Joe Flacco's Mariano Rivera. Don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying that at all. But there was no way that they felt like they could. The longer it went with PJ, the worse it was going to be. Back to DTR. They had to go back to him because with all the hysteria around Josh Dobbs, they traded Josh Dobbs because they were so convicted on DTR. They had to go back to him. Why would you not? If you were so convicted in August, you mean one game's going to make you not convicted? I think that's what they decided to do. But look, both quarterbacks have thrown one touchdown, Walker and Thompson Robinson, and they've thrown 9 interceptions between the two of them.
Michael, I'm a firm believer that both universities and pro football franchises can be guilty of chasing the ghosts of transcendent coaches. Nebraska, 25 years later, is still chasing the ghost of Tom Osborne. Boise State is chasing the ghost of Chris Peterson. The Vikings are still chasing the ghost of Bud Grant. The Bills are still chasing the ghost of Marv Levy. David Tepper fired Frank Reich in his first year as head coach, less than a season removed from firing Matt Rhule in his first year as head coach. Isn't Carolina simply chasing the ghost of Ron Rivera?
Yeah.
If not, what are the root issues for this unprecedented turnover rate in head coaches?
Well, I mean, the problem is really everybody went to that press conference and they were asking Tepper, Tepper did something wrong firing Frank. Like, why did you fire Frank? Did anybody watch the games? I mean, the question shouldn't be why did he fire Frank? The question should be why did he hire Frank? Because Frank showed nothing at the Colts to deserve him to be a quarterback guru. I truly believe he had post-traumatic syndrome over Carson Wentz. I think the question to David Tepper is, and I've said this on the pod today, you got to throw away your phone. you got to stop operating the business listening to 1,000 people. No one's got your best interest at heart. You need to brand the team. You need to say, this is who we're going to become, and then hire somebody that can share that vision with you together. Because if you think you're going to hire a play caller, whether it's Ben Johnson, whether it's somebody, I mean, look, Sean McVay is a great play caller, but he's not a great team builder. I mean, think about all the money they've wasted out there, from Todd Gurley's extension to all the things they've done. They've won a Super Bowl. Remember, they gave Goff that ridiculous contract, and then they had to trade him. So, like sometimes the best play caller, the best offensive coach, isn't the best builder of your team. And what Carolina needs more than anything, they need a team builder. They need somebody to come in there and say, hey, here's how you win in the NFL. You build your offensive and your defensive line. You put resources here. Here's what you do. I mean, the Eagles were able to overcome the horrible Carson Wentz contract by finding Hurts. Think about it. Where would they be if they kept going down that road with Carson Wentz? Where would they be? They got out of it because they have systems in place to help themselves. That's what Carolina doesn't have. Carolina can't solve a problem because there's no systems in place. It's all based on someone's opinion. And oftentimes those opinions are never honest. I said this today. Mike, you'd be shocked. David Tepper said something at that press conference that was so revealing. He said that everybody in the room agreed on Bryce Young. And I can honestly tell you that's 1,000% true for the minute they were all in the room. When half of them left the room, they all disagreed with the pick. No one told the truth in the room. Nobody. Very few told the truth. There's no conviction in the league. That's why Bill Walsh always used to say all the time, we're only competing against eight.
A nice segue with your Eagles comments to my final question, Michael. About the game this weekend in Philadelphia between the 49ers and the Eagles, which will go a long way to determining the number one seed in the NFC. So my question to you is, Michael, which of these two teams needs home field more to make it to the Super Bowl?
I think neither do. I think both can win on the road and have proven that. I would think the Niners would play better with their defensive front with crowd noise in San Francisco. But I think both teams feel very comfortable playing. And I think the one thing we've been able to do over the last 10 years, 15 years, is reduce the impact of the home field. I mean, look at Seattle, right? Everybody talks about it. Seattle's got great home field, great home field. Everybody walks in there. And I mean, San Francisco walked in there and had no problem. They had no problem dealing with it because we know how to use the silent count now. Everybody understands it. And when you're a good offense, this is what I learned from Bill Walsh. Why did Walsh have a better road record than a home record? Because offensively, when you're good on offense, you can play well on the road. You get the lead, you can play from in front. When you're a defensive team and you go on the road and you fall behind, it gets hard. It gets really hard because your offense isn't really good enough. Like Cleveland, they're going to go on the road if they make the playoffs. It won't be good for them. Look at Cleveland's splits defensively on the road. You got to be good offensive teams win on the road, and both these teams have good offenses. Now, what I just answered that is Philly going on the road with that offense will struggle because they haven't reached the levels they did last year.
30 seconds for this answer, Michael. Any chance Bill Belichick ends up in Buffalo next year?
You read my mind. I mean, look, I think a lot of it's going to come down to what happens the next 6 weeks. I think Buffalo's got a good chance to get to the playoffs, and that could save them. But if he doesn't get to the playoffs and Bill Belichick's out there, why wouldn't Terry Pegula make one phone call? Why wouldn't he? It would make too much sense to me. But look, I'm just sitting here doing shows with you and Stormy and enjoying myself. That makes sense. Because, look, Buffalo's come so close. What's going to get him over the hump? How did Jim Mara get fired in Indianapolis? Because they got so close.
Awesome. So Palms Pressing 4 today. We got a bonus Palms Pressing 3 today, which was always nice. Do you have a strong opinion on this Niners-Eagles game?
I bet it already. I laid 2.5.
All right. We'll see if the Niners can get it done on the road in Philly. A little redemption for that NFC Championship game from a season ago. Appreciate Mike Somich for stopping by in hour one. Mike Palm for joining us, as always, for this last half hour. And Michael Lombardi.
Michael, you're the best.
You're the best.
Thank you, Mike.
That's it for
us today. Thank you, Stormy. Safe trip. We'll miss you on Sunday, Stormy.
Appreciate you. Thank you. Yes, headed out to Troy, Alabama as we speak. Sun Belt Championship coming up this weekend. Make sure you check it out on ESPN. That's a wrap for us. Keep it locked right here on VSiN.